The following shiur is recorded, edited, and presented to you by Kol HaLashon. We wish you an enjoyable and meaningful time listening.
So this week we read two parashiyos, Behara and Bechukosai, which include many mitzvahs. One of them is Shvisas Haoretz. But in the very near future, I will start giving a series of Shiurim and Shmita, so that's not what we will be discussing today. In the beginning of the Pasha, Pasha's Bahar, we learn the mitzvah of Oinoa. Ki timkeru memke le'amisecho, o kano miyad amisecho, lo isoinu ish es amisoi. Do not cheat. Be honest in your monetary dealings. So the seller is prohibited to demand an unreasonable price, which is higher than market value. The buyer has the same mitzvah. If the seller is unaware of how much the merchandise is worth, the buyer must make him aware. And he cannot pay less than market value. So this mitzvah is incumbent on both the seller and the buyer. Lo yisainu ish es amisoi. So there are many details in this complex sugya. In Bava Metzia Daf Nun Amud Beis Omer Rava Hilchasa. Pochas Mishtus Mechila. If it's less than a sixth, then no money goes back. What you paid, and that's it. If it's exactly a sixth, kona mekach v'machzer enoa. The transaction is valid. Doesn't go back. But whatever you took, and it was illegitimate, whatever you took more than market value, you need to give that money back. Yoyse mishtos, more than a sixth, let's say it's 7 or 8 or 9 or 10%, mekach bottle. The entire transaction is invalidated, is invalid. And so Rechiyun, on what basis did Chazal determine these halachas? On one hand, Pochas Mishtus Mechila. But it's so unreasonable to assume that it's exactly a sixth, and it makes no difference whether the entire amount the person paid is 100 shekel or $10 million. It is always about 6%. And why is it exactly 6%, which kono v'machzeinu, and 7%, the entire transaction is invalid? Why is that? What is the logic behind this? And why is there a difference between a sixth and more than a sixth? Why wouldn't we say same rule should apply to 10%? The transaction is valid, but give the money back. Is this the classical bitul mekach? In Dina Kenyonim, mekach u memkach is a concept of bitul mekach. But bitul mekach is always dependent on a mum. If there's a blemish, if there's something in what I bought, which I wasn't aware of. I bought a car, and it doesn't have a motor. I bought an animal, and it has no teeth. It'll die from hunger within a week. That is a mum b'mekach, mekach bottle. The more extreme example is yain v'nim tzachoymetz. I bought a big quantity of wine, but the wine is spoiled. It's not wine. It's not ra'ui l'shtia. Those are the classical examples of bitul mekach. But in our case, I got exactly what I bought, what I wanted to buy. I just paid far more than market value, so why wouldn't the halacha be okay? So give the money back. What is the logic of bitul mekach? Another relevant question is, how do we know at all that money goes back? By gzeila, there's a mitzvah to say v'heishav as a gzeila shegozal. By ribis, for instance, we learn from the pasuk v'chayu chicho imach that you need to give the money back. Ribis tusi yoytze b'dayonim. But by Oinoa, all we have is a lav. Loisoinu wishes a miso. We have no mitzvah to give the money back. Comes along the Pnei Yeshua, and the Pnei Yeshua says, if this money is not legitimate, then it goes back to Gezel. Then it's Gezel. You have the mitzvah to say Lasha Gezel. So why by ribis do we need a posuk? So there's a fundamental sugi in Baba Metzia Samach Aleph. Lamali the kosav rachmon alav begezel alav bainoa velav beribis. The Gemara asks, aren't these three prohibitions same sides of the same coin? Most coins have two sides. But this one might have three sides of the same coin. Gezel, Oinoa, Veribis. And the Gemara differentiates between them. By Gezel, you take OPM, other people's money, against their will. Either by force, and that is Gzela, or without their knowledge, Boba Machteris, and that is Gneva. But by Oinoa, I wasn't violent. I didn't take anybody's money without his consent. He paid. He paid. Nobody forced him to pay. Nobody coerced him. But on the other hand, he paid. He wasn't aware that you're cheating him. He paid. He thought that's a fair price. But by ribis, nobody cheated him. He knew what he's paying. And he decided to go for it. And therefore, we can't learn Ainoa from Gzela. We can neither learn Ribis from Ainoa. So when the Gemara does differentiate between the three, does that mean that the three are really not related? Or is the fundamental assumption intact? They are three sides of the same coin. But they're not entirely similar. So we can't learn one from the other. But the differences are nuanced fundamentally. Atzada shove shabahem, the common denominator is, this money is not legitimate money. Money that you've taken and you don't deserve needs to go back. So in my opinion, this is such a fundamental svara. In all the averis shabamamim, it's not about the actual act, the actual deed. It is about the result. It's about money. And if you don't deserve this money, what you received, shelo kedin, needs to go back. That's a svara pshut. So why does the Torah need to say, v'heshev es gzeila shegozo? One of two explanations. Either it is from this mitzvah say that we learn this fundamental principle. What you took, shelo kedin, needs to go back. Or maybe, because there are many halachas that we learn from v'heshev es gzeila shegozel. Ke'ein shegozel, shinui koine. Kol ha'gezon ha'meshalme kesha'as gzeila. And, laver olav bishnayim. Ba'aseyu belo ta'aseh. So why do we need a pasuk by Ribis? Because Ribis is different than Ainoa. By Ribis there is an issa not only on the recipient of the Ribis, also on the one that gives Ribis. There could be no issa on the nigzal, or the one that was cheated. Ribis is different. The Ramban, actually the Rashbo, Tshuvas HaMiuchasot, Ramban Reish Chof Gimel explains that the Isser of Ribis is actually a Chiddush. Because Ribis is Schirus. It's rent. In Halacha we find four different areas of Schirus. Schirus Batim, Schirus Poyalam, Schirus Behem, Schirus Kalem. Same in the modern world. You rent a house. You pay for your workers. They deserve to get paid for their work, for their labor. The house owner deserves to get paid because you're living in his house. You could rent a car. What Chazal defined in their days, Schirus Behema. Some other things are up for rent, even though it's less common because things are so inexpensive today. But once upon a time, I remember when people rented computers. They rented typewriters. That is almost non-existent today. But the Ramban explains, Ribis is actually Schirus. Why would you expect to live in another person's house without paying? Why would you expect to use another person's car without paying? Why would you expect to use another person's money without paying? So Ribis is a Chiddush. Chosef Arav, living 100 years ago, I don't want to mention his name because he was a Gavra Rab and a Gevaldige Talmud Chacham, and he was offered many prestigious posts, and he preferred not to be Nana Mekvoida Torah, and he wrote in his Sefer an argument that today there should be no Yisrael of Rivis, because Rivis is common practice, and it is not perceived by people as an Aveda. And I think that's a great mistake. That's a great mistake. Torah is eternal. Torah Asad Rivis forever. And I could so well understand why the Torah Asad Rivis. Atu Yoitzom v'atu Yodea Yitzom ki heimo bosav adam. When a person is in desperation, he will pay anything to get money. He won't pay to rent a car. He might not pay even to rent a house. He will move in with someone else. But for money, he will pay any price. And the Torah also knows human shortcomings. There always will be those people that will take advantage of one's desperation to squeeze money out of him, even if we know that there's no other way this could end, either in a cemetery or in an asylum or in jail. We know from the black market, in Israel it's called Shuk Afor, Shuk HaShechor, people take loans 25, 30, 40, 50% a year. Impossible interest. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows human shortcomings and follies, and that is why the Torah Aser D'Ribis. Because the Torah knows when a person is desperate, they'll pay any price. And there always will be those that are willing to take any price and destroy a person just for greed. So the Torah Aser D'Ribis. But Ribis is different, because Ribis is actually like Schirus. So once again, the fundamental principle in my eyes, what you took shalom kedin needs to go back. And we don't even need a posuk for that. So poches mishtus, no money goes back, and that is mechila. Is there a lav? Is there an iso? There's not, there just isn't a shlim. And the same question is relevant by karkois. Ein enoa le karkois. So bakarka, there is no enoa. And there's also a poshet esfora. Most items, merchandise, whatever it is, in the modern world have market value. And it's usually quite accurate and precise. Real estate is always different. Real estate, there is a certain spectrum. There is not a clear market value. And any person whose job is to evaluate will always tell you anywhere between a million and two, anywhere between a million 3.3 or a million 0.4. And therefore, Bakarka, there is no Enoa. Is there a lav? Then Ambana Latoyde clearly says, yes. There is no payment, but there is a prohibition. The same with Poches Mishtus. Toises, on the other hand, Bov Metzia Samachalav clearly says, Bakarka, there is no lav. Poches Mishtus, Sholosh Machloikis Vedava. Ramban says that it's an Aveira. Sefer HaChinuch says no, Shin Lamed Zayim. The Rosh is Mesupik, and the Rosh is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, Choshe Mishpot, Reish Chof Zayin, Siv Zayin. So the Rosh is Mesupik, I think it's Siv Vav, not Siv Zayin. So this is one of the questions. Is there an Issa even when there is no due payment? On the other hand, could there be a chiyuv tashlumin payment when there is no iser? Achiyeza, Reb Chaim Oizer. Chela Gimel, Simen Pei Aleph, asks, is there a chiyuv tashlumin oinua on a cotton? So the one that cheated another is a minor. Quite bright. Not too nice. He's not even an adult. But he already knows how to cheat. So he was the one that took more money than he deserves, or paid less than he should have paid. He's not a bar chiyuva. He's not mitzuva and mitzvah satayra. Would there be payment? Would payment be due? This is a discussion in Achiyeza. We'll talk about it at greater length, maybe in another opportunity. I just want to touch the points. So the Isser and chiyuv Are they two sides of the same coin, or sometimes there would be an issa without a chiyuv? According to the Ramban, definitely yes. Pochas mishtus and kakois. Could there be a chiyuv without an issa? That is the question of my kotin. My firm opinion is, chiyuv and teshlumen are not intertwined. They're not dependent one on the other. So one could ask, is a nos necessarily an averat mamon? Is it a monetary transgression? Or maybe it has more to do with your fundamental honesty and integrity. It's not about the money, it's about the conduct. One might argue that's the suffix of Tosis above a metziah dafayin. Tosis is mesupik. B'nei noyach, are they metzuva anei noah? If it's about money, Tosis says maybe it's included in gezel shel b'nei noyach. If it's not about the money, meichet Tosis. Many times I try to teach my talmidim, contrary to what we are used to thinking in yeshivas, that every suffix, every chakir, every machlekes rishonim must be dependent on the fundamentals of the sugya. No, most of the times, the machlekes are about the nuances, about the dakus. So the suffix on Tosis is not necessarily whether a noah is mominous or not. I think it is more, how do we define sheva mitzvahs b'nei noyach? How much could be included in those seven? In Minchas Osh and different sources, I explain sheva mitzvahs b'nei noyach are different than tariag mitzvahs shel Yisroel. And some of those sheva mitzvahs include many others that in our system are separate mitzvahs. And that is the suffix of Tosis. Gezel shel b'nei noyach. Does it include Eiluah? Does it include Ribis? Of course, we're dealing with monetary Avedis, monetary transgressions. Avedis sheba mamayin. V'yafal piken. How much could fit in to Gezel de b'nei noyach? That is what I would understand in Tosis. So in Pashtus, we usually think that Eiluah is because I was fooled. I was cheated. I thought I'm paying market value and I overpaid. Or on the other hand, I was underpaid. I relied on the purchaser. He told me, he checked the value and this is what it's worth. And he paid me less than I really deserve to get. That is the classical example of a noah. And that is what the Gemara says in Bov Metzia and Samach Aleph that I quoted before. Noah is different than Gezel because by Noah, he paid out of his consent. There was no coercion. He wasn't forced to pay. But he mistakenly paid, and that's Mechila Betos. However, then Amor writes in Reish Chov Zayin Siv Zayin that if a purchaser was aware of the Noah and he paid anyway, he is entitled to ask to get his money back. And the Beis Yosef wonders, if he was aware, then why would that be considered a noah? But the Ramah is based on the Mordechai, Bov Metzia Shein Zayin, and the Mordechai is based on a Gemara. Bov Metzia Nun Aleph, Chazal tell the same story that happened with two different Ameroim. So that there was this person that sold merchandise, and he asked for $60 a pound. It actually was worth $50 a pound, market value. But he overpriced what he wanted to sell. And the people knew you could negotiate down to 55, and he always sells for 55. Mr. Aleph is a oibachochem, if you know what an oibachochem is. And he said, I'm not going to negotiate. I prefer paying 60, because that's a shtus. And I'll take him to Bezin and I'll get my money back. If I pay 55, that's pachas mishtus. Then total loss. I'm not going to get a penny back. I prefer to overpay. He asked for 60. I'll give him 60. I'll drag him to Bezin. And that's a shtus. He'll need to give me the money back. So the Gemara says, well, you're really a very clever guy. But there are some factors that you didn't realize. By a balabayas, there is no Einoah. Einoah is only a shopkeeper, a wholesaler, a retailer, a soicher. But a person sells his personal belongings, there is no Yisrael Einoah. And this makes so much sense. We expect people in the marketplace to be honest. and straightforward. You cannot underpay, you cannot overprice. But a person out of desperation is not a soicher, it's not his business. Out of desperation, he needs to sell his personal belongings. When you sell your personal belongings, your personal furniture, whatever you have, you're entitled to set the price as you wish. This is not a store. I'm not a soicher. This is not my parnosa. I am in desperation. I'm in dire straits. I have no other option. I need to sell my house, my furniture, my kisveyad, my svorim. There is no I know in that case. So that...
Kol Halashon.
That was the case of these two stories. It was a balabayas shemocha. There is no I know. So you thought you're very smart. You're going to pay 60. You're not going to go bring him down to 55. You're going to get your money back. You're not going to get your money back. But the Mordechai proves from this Gemara, if it wouldn't be a balabayas, there would be a din oinoa. You knew that you're overpaying, and it's still oinoa. And the Bishayis of Wonders. But it's all about mechila, achiyira letaga. I think the difference is very simple. And I want to explain that I'm on the Mordechai. If the seller is totally honest and he tells the purchaser, listen, the market price is 50, but I hope to get 60. And this is what I want. And the purchaser says, you know what? I'm willing to pay 60. That's mechila. He gets nothing back because nobody cheated you. He was totally open and he told you the market price is 50. You could buy this elsewhere for 50. But I expect to get 60. And if he agreed to pay 60, there is no moral justification to ask for your money back. You knew that you're paying more than market value and you had the option to go somewhere else and buy for 50. That is what we call mechila. But when the moicha, the seller, is not honest, and he pretends that the market price is 60, even though the purchaser knows that it's actually 50, the seller is a cheat, but the buyer is not a tamim. In that case, the halacha is, you could pay 60 and take him to Bezin and get your money back. Because he was over an oinoa. You didn't take the bait. You weren't fooled. And therefore, you're entitled to ask for your money back. And that is the chiddush. It still is a chiddush. Because if not for this Gemara, if not for the Mordechai, if not for the Ramo, we will understand that the entire concept of Einoah is you overpaid without being aware that you overpaid. But if you're aware you're overpaying, maybe that's Mechila. Mordechai says no. And that's what they prove from the Gemara. Mechila is only if the seller told me, or the other side of the equation, the buyer says, I want you to know your merchandise is worth 60, but I can't pay that price. I'm willing to pay 50. You agree or not? In that case, the seller, he agreed. Nobody cheated. The buyer told you, you could get more from others. But this is what I can pay. And if you agreed, that's mechila. But if the buyer tried to cheat the seller, but the seller was aware that he's underpaying, in that case, he could demand, I'll take you to Bezin and you're going to pay a full price. So that is the chiddush of the Rama. And it does seem to be a chiddush in Gidrei Einoah. I wrote many tshuvis about Shailas of Einoah. Maybe I'll tell you the most amusing one. There was a gabbai in a shul, and he used to check all the nickels and dimes and pennies, cents in America, pennies in England. He used to check the shkolim and the chotzi shekel and the agurot. And sometimes you would come across a cent that is worth $10, a dime that is worth $50. Who does that money belong to? Well, the coins were the shul's coins. And I paskin the gabbai, he could pocket that money. Why is that? I mean, the coin that fetched $10 doesn't belong to him, it belongs to the shul. But the shul never made the effort of checking out those coins. Most people don't. I never check coins because it's an effort, it's a schlep. Very unlikely that you're going to make any real money. It's time consuming. Nobody does it. And therefore, to you, to the shul, a cent is a cent. And a dime is a dime and not more. And if he makes the effort checking out those nickels and dimes and cents, that profit is his. So many other poskim saw this as a gevaldige chiddush, but to me it seems davar poshut. Similar question. Yeshiva closed down. So the Oitzer Sforim made a Sforim sale. And they took a dollar for each sefer because they really didn't have what to do with those Sforim. Tons of Sforim, and no local shul was interested in taking them. Person bought a few Sforim. A few years later, he becomes aware that one of them has Hagos, Ksav Yad from a Godel that lived 200 years ago. And for that sefer, in an auction house, he fetched $1,000. Does he need to go back to that yeshiva that closed down, Mitzad HaShavas Aveda, Mitzad HaNoa, and say, the sefer that you sold me for a dollar is actually worth $1,000? And I said, no. Same as the story with the little coins. So anybody that sells old Sforim should be aware that maybe one of these old Sforim could be worth a reasonable amount of money. Some of them have a ghost. You don't know whose they are. But the fact is you never checked it out because it's time consuming. It's unlikely that you're going to make any real money. 99.99% of Sforim that have a ghost from nobody. You'll never know who that person would have been. I have many old Sforim in my home. Most of them I received from my late father-in-law, a tzaddik. And many of them have footnotes or ksav yad. I don't think it's anything of notable value. How would I know? So you could take a mumcha and waste your time. And once again, 99.9%. You're not going to come up with anything. And therefore, to the yeshiva, those four were worth a dollar and not more. And the one that hit the jackpot, zochaloi, and he does not need to go back and make the seller aware this sefer was worth. No, to him, at that time, it was worth a dollar and not more. So some of my tshuvas in these halachas are printed in Menachos Sofer. Most of them are not yet. And I daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day. I should have the s'chus to Lahagdil Torah u'Ladino, to write many more Sforim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give me Aruches Yonim and Gesund, and we should be able to keep up Avodas HaKadosh Lahagdil Torah u'Ladino. I cannot say goodbye today without sharing with you some feelings that we all are carrying with us in the past few days. Thursday night, go. It's a sreifa, asher sorof Hashem. What a tragedy, and what a horrific night. As tens of thousands of other fathers and mothers, Zaydis and Bobbies, I was up all night Thursday night. I couldn't go to sleep until I heard that all my Einiklach and children who are up there are safe and sound. Many fathers and mothers at the end of that tragic night became aware that their children and Einiklach are not safe and sound and never will be. They will be safe and sound somewhere else, up in Gan Eden. Bas Tzion Horidi Kenachal Dimo Yoimam Valayla. And the posuk that was on my lips was Shavas Mesois Libeinu, Nefach La'Evel Mecholeinu, at the height of the greatest Simcha. I want you to understand, nowhere in the Jewish world is there a greater Simcha than Miron Lag Ba'Oimah. Simchas Torah, there are 100,000 Simchas. Every shul, every yeshiva in the Jewish world rejoices. But it is only in Miran where hundreds and thousands of Jews come together. B'shiro, b'zimro, dancing and singing and just rejoicing. Rejoicing with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, with the great Talei Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. And it is there, at the height of Simcha, that tragedy struck. And how? 45 korbonos, many of them, tinoike shel beis rabam sheloi tam utam chait, kedoshim v'toirem, הנחמודים והנעים הם בחייהם ובמויסם לא נפרדו. Brothers, two families lost more than one child, two children, Engelrad and Elchadad. Unbearable tragedy. What I thought about Thursday night and I've been thinking about since is the posuk Vayidoim Aharon. Such a striking similarity. It was Yom Shmini LeMiluim. It was a day we've been waiting for, one could say hundreds of years. Golos Mitzrayim. We were in Golos. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings us out of Eretz Mitzrayim and tells us we're going to Har Sinai to get the Torah. And after Har Sinai, V'yosuli Migdash V'shuchanti B'soichem, hundreds of years in Golos, and a painful journey in the desert. We failed and failed again. Soron Esyonis. Finally, we're at the Mishkan. And we're going to be Zoyche to Asher Oseshchem. V'yisu Aron Esyodav Alaom V'yevarcheim. Aaron HaKoyen blesses the people in Berchas Koyanim. V'yered mi'asois achatos v'esuoylo v'esashlomim after avoides ayoyim. And then suddenly v'teitzei eish me'lefnei Hashem v'toich aloysom v'yamusu lefnei Hashem. At the height of this unbelievable simcha, tragedy strikes. How does Aaron respond? Vayidoim Aharon. He does not respond. Silence. Sometimes we have nothing to say. We could only cry. And we have no words. Vayidoim Aharon. But there's a marvelous medrash and a beautiful vort I heard many years ago. In the Medrash says, what could he say? What did he have to say? What's the revus of Vayidoim Aharon? And the Medrash says, he had what to say. He had what to say. B'yom Hashmini Yimur B'Sar Alosoi. And it's a wonder. What is that? What does that have to do? I heard a gevaldige vort. The Gemara Nida Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. Lama Omer Toira Tinoknim L'Shmini. Shelo yu kulam smechem va'ove ve'imoy atzuvim. So the mother is impure 7 days. So father and mother will be sad. And all the others will rejoice. The cousins and the aunts and the uncles and the Bob and the Zaid, everybody's going to be happy. But mother and father will be sad. And that is why the Torah says, no, this is impossible. They deserve to be happier than all the others. Lama omru Torah tinoik nimol shmini shelo yukulam samechem va'ove ve'imo yatzuvem. Aaron HaKoyen had what to say. And he could ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, do I deserve this? How could it be? Tinoik nimol shmini. It's an impossible situation that all the others are happy and the mechatonim are sad. Is anybody closer to the base of Middash than me, Aaron HaKohen could say? So everybody's going to rejoice. They're all going to be dancing and singing, and I will be crying over my children. But he preferred not to ask questions. We never ask questions. Eov is the classical example of tragedy, of mourning, of sadness. In the beginning of the Sefer, a storm rages through the city, and the house crashes down on Eov's children, and they're lost. And it's such a tragic story. So many tzoras, and Eov is sitting and crying, and his friends come to console him, to be mechazik him. And then we have a lengthy discussion in Sefer Eov. And every one of them comes up with different philosophies and different ideas, and everyone has what to say. And Eve is just sitting there and sharing their thoughts. And at the end of the Sefer, once again, storm strikes. And a Kodesh Baruch Hu nigla lifnei Eov. And a Kodesh Baruch Hu asks some profound questions. Number one, Efo hayita biyozdi oretz hagedna im yadata bino. Where were you when I created the world? Were you there? Were you there? Did you see? Alma adanei hudbau umiara even pinata. And what does the world rest? And who is the creator? Haniglulacha sharei mavet v'sharei tzel mavet tir'eh. Do you know what death is about? Do you know what the gates of death are? And Eov is silent. And what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is conveying to Eov is, it's not about understanding. This is a futile attempt. There are things we cannot understand. It is about accepting the things you cannot understand. That is the secret of Vayidoim Aharoim. It's about submission. It's about knowing in your heart that HaKadosh Baruch Hu always loves you, even when tragedy strikes, and even more when tragedy strikes. I heard many times from my great Rebbe, Hagon HaKodesh HaTzadik, the Kloisenberg Rebbe, the Divrei Yatzev. When we say Kabbalah Sol Malch HaShemayim, Shema Yisrael HaShem Elokeinu HaShem Echad, Ma'ave Yodo Yaleinu, we cover our eyes with our hands. Why is that? So Pashtas HaDvorim, because we want to prevent distraction. You shouldn't look here and look there and be distracted. But if that's the only reason, we could just close our eyes and look into the Siddur. This seems to be a symbolic act, raising your hand and covering your eyes. Said the Kloisenberg Rebbe, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, as we all know from 1,000 different sources, Shema Vayez Lachamim and Shema Elokim is Midas Adin. Sometimes we experience Lachamim, many times Din. But in the depth of our hearts, we believe Hashem Echad. Everything is Havaya. Everything is Rachamim. We might not see it. We might not be able to see it. And that is why we cover our eyes as a symbolic act, as if to say, we know, Rabbeinu Shel Olam. We believe, Avinu Shebishamayim. Whatever you do is to the better. We cannot see it. But regardless of whether we can or not, we cover our eyes, we believe, and we try to feel it. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Everything is Rachamim. That is what we were taught by our forefathers, the great Tana Rebbe Kiva. Called Yoved Rachmon El Tavoved. Rabbi Kiva was a disciple of Nochem Ish Gamzu. And he had a very painful life. And he always said, Gamzu Letoiva. 45 korbonos, v'malos kedoshim v'tahirim, in the midst of a simcha shel mitzvah, perished in such a tragic way. What do we have to say? Nothing. V'yidoim aharon. What we have to say is, we love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we know that He always loves us. And one day, when Mashiach will come, we'll understand everything in a different way. Kasher HaKadosh Baruch Hu yegale ofor me'einenu. So we daven for the neshamas, and they daven for us. And we send tanchumim to all the wonderful families. Kodesh Baruch Hu should bechazik you, Kodesh Baruch Hu should give you the strength to stand in this terrible nesayon. The entirety of Klal Yisrael is with you in your pain, in your suffering. Ubenachomas tzion tinucham. We all should be nesmachim. Benachomas tzion v'yushalayim. ולא נוסיף לדאבו אוי, ושהיא בסרחת התחי הסמייסם, תוביאס משיח צדקנו, במהירו ויומנו, אמן.
The shiur you've listened to was recorded and edited for you by Kol HaLashon. You're invited to continue listening at any time to all the shiurim and drushos in all topics by all the Rabbanim on Kol HaLashon.